You are back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we are really happy to be joined by William Briggs, who is a teacher, journalist and political economist and activist, and regularly writes for Green Left. And we'll be discussing issues related to the new Prime Minister, the militarism and the Quad. Welcome back to the show, William. We've got a few, questions to ask you about, the change in government. And you have written an article in Green Left. It's titled Business as Usual, Albanese and the Quad, where you mention the first action of a new government is always steeped in symbolism. And we know one of the first actions of the Albanese Labour government was to fly, one of the first actions was for him to fly to Tokyo and pledge his support to the anti-China grouping of the US, Japan, India and Australia, the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, or the Quad as they are known. William, what does this symbolise?
Yes, thanks. As I say, all new governments come in with some symbol. Usually it's just fairly empty rhetoric, we will govern for all, or we will do this, or we will lift living standards, or we will cure this problem or that problem. Albanese's first act of symbolism was to effectively let everybody know in this country and the world just where his allegiance and the allegiance of the Australian government and therefore ruling elites in this country, where it really lay. And it's got nothing, and that allegiance is not to people or the problems or the trillion-dollar debt or any of those things, but to reaffirm in the eyes of particularly Biden and the United States, to a lesser extent the other Quad members, just the fact that they have absolutely nothing to fear by this change of government. It is just a change of name. Our role will remain as it has traditionally, that of complete and total ally of the United States whilst playing our own independent role in support of them in the region. Because there is nothing surer than in the last few years, the drift has been towards confrontation with China. It would have been a very, very dangerous move for any new government to come out and say, look, we're going to have really wonderful relations. We're going to go into sort of bilateral relations with China, possibly at the expense of our allies. It's never going to do that. And we had to let everybody know that we are there with the United States as strongly as ever. And in fact, he did make a statement that he was going to seek to strengthen the alliance even further, which of itself is an almost impossible exercise in hyperbole, because something that is as committed as it is can barely be strengthened. But that is really what the symbolism is all about. We will not be changing any actions. We are still, on the one hand, a subservient, almost vassal state of the United States, but we will act independently when necessary in your interests, which are perceived to be our interests. So that is the thing that was most obvious in that very first day. And even before the election, he pledged to be in Tokyo. Before he even was able to form a government, before he was assured of a majority or whether he'd be ruling in minority, none of that was important. What was important was to make that journey, Foreign Minister Wong to go with him, to say, look, we are here and we will stay and you will maintain your position of power and privilege in the Pacific and the Indo-Pacific. So that's really what the symbolism is all about.
Ari here. What's China's response being like in terms of Albanese and the Quad's sort of military theatrics, so to speak, their symbolism?
Yeah. China was, on the one hand, looking to improve relations. Things are very, very poor. They said that, we'd like to sort of reset this relationship. We'd like to work with the new government. And that was a sort of conciliatory gesture. At the same time, they're not fools in any regard. Their response to the Quad was unequivocal, that it was seeking to strengthen the ring, if you like, against China, the Quad, and the AUKUS alignment, which they describe as the globalization of NATO, bringing, or actually they supported that idea, which had come from Britain, trying to engage more heavily through AUKUS in the region. They see the threat as an absolute threat. They recognize that Australia is not going away as part of that threat, the minor threat that both may be, but they are wanting, if at all possible, it would seem, to soften that relationship. Albanese, in response, of course, made a big fuss about the trade sanctions, as he described them, which were, in fact, responses to Australia's rather belligerent stance under the former government in support of the United States. Now, that stance has actually strengthened. So China is rightly, I think, feeling threatened by the strengthening of the Quad, the strengthening of the alliance, the AUKUS relationship, and that whole encirclement process and policy that the United States has been implementing for so many years, moving from containment to almost a position of rollback, if you like. But so I don't know if that goes anywhere near answering the question, but that's really where their responses and their thoughts appear to be.
No, that's a good answer.
Yeah, and William, no matter what these Quad leaders say, I mean, there's really no evidence to suggest any overt threat from China. The world sits on the brink of a global recession, and the challenge that you've said in your article, the challenge from China is economic. Can you please elaborate on this point?
It comes in a number of ways. If, first of all, we think about China and its foreign policy of any country and diplomatic policy generally includes that act of diplomacy, act of economics, trade, and so on. Very few countries have built into that policy a military part. The United States bases it entirely on a military component. China never had. China traditionally, and we're talking traditionally over hundreds and hundreds and possibly thousands of years, has almost exclusively not been expansionary in that militarist way. China, since opening up to the West and adopting capitalism as an economic formation that seemed to suit it, and effectively rejecting socialism, if you like, became, first of all, in the eyes of the West, a workshop, a huge factory, and then it got good at being capitalist and started to behave exactly as other capitalist states do, and its economy rose rapidly and is still rising. Even though it's stalling at the moment as the world appears to be headed into recession, its economy is the and its percentage rise is the only thing that is keeping the entire global economy from absolute catastrophe. Now, the United States, as anybody, if I'm aware of this, the United States certainly are, they are absolutely horrified at the prospect of losing that hegemony, of losing the economic top status in the globe, because from that economic status, the United States controls the world. Now, China obviously wants to maximize their power economically, and that is happening. The United States need to counter that. So if there is a threat, it is certainly not a military threat, because if you think about the Chinese military capacity, if you look for the People's Liberation Army, you'll find them in China or on the borders. Their Navy is on the borders. Their Air Force is on the borders. They're not ringing the globe with bases. But the threat, therefore, is obviously not one of a military threat, but the threat to the, not the global capitalist order, but the American capitalist order is immense. For you or I or anybody else who happens to have to go out and earn a living, it doesn't matter one jot whether the ruling capitalist economy is based in America, China, anywhere, Switzerland, doesn't matter. The rules are the same. The exploitation is the same for the ordinary working class people anywhere in the world. But what matters, as far as the United States is concerned, is loss of power and prestige, and it will do anything to maintain that. And along the way, it has created a myth which has worked spectacularly well of there being a Chinese threat. Those statistics that come out regularly in Australia when they poll people, how much can you trust China? Is China a threat to us? It's well over 60% now believe that China is a danger to us. Just 10 years ago, there was about a 30% belief that China would not behave responsibly. Now it's a vast, overwhelming majority believing that China is a threat. And it's a threat because it threatens US economic hegemony. And it's as simple as that. But economics is one of those things that our ruling classes like to make appear as foggy and as difficult and, as they say, the dismal science as much as possible. People's eyes glaze over as soon as the word gets used. Political issues, they can get a better head around. And if that means a bayonet attached, whether it's real or imagined, so much the better. So China becomes a threat, even though there is no possible gauge that it is in any way. It is what it is. It is seeking to advance its own economic strength and is doing so. And it can only rise as the United States falls, and that is so palpably obvious. That disparity is getting less and less. China is really closing the gap with the United States. The only difference is whether it's going to happen in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, but it is almost inevitable that China will become the economic hegemon, and the United States is never going to accept that because it can only do one of a number of things. It can share power, which it won't. It's going to dominate, which it will try to do, or it can pack its bags, US imperialism, and say, I'm off to the Bahamas for my holidays. It's not going to do that either. It only sees America rising and keep on rising. Part of their American exceptionalism, part of their mythology. And that's what makes the world a dangerous place. Not military threat, but America's fear of loss of power.
Mm. In terms of America's fear of loss of power and what you were talking about earlier about whether or not the US or China is the major economic power in the world, not really affecting ordinary people. It is also true that militarism and war hurts ordinary people. So the more we militarize, the more we threaten war with China, the more that will harm the ordinary people. And you mentioned in your article that in Australia, our kind of total subservience to the interest of the US is hardly the way forward, right? And it's not the US's way forward either. So how is the Australian government justifying ramping up militarism and its war drive against China if it seems to be if it's really only in the interest of the US elite?
Yeah, this becomes the crux of so much of politics and foreign policy and in this country and the world. It doesn't make the slightest bit of sense for Australia to remain in that subservient position to the US interest, except for the fact that foreign direct investment, the money that one capitalist state invests in another, remains so heavily weighted globally in the United States way. Nearly 25% of all the money invested in Australia comes from the US. Mm. And various American leaders, secretaries of state and so on, have made it clear that it's not a good bet to bet against the US. So the threat is not terribly veiled. You wouldn't want us to withdraw that port. China's, for instance, is only 2% of all of Australian foreign investment comes from China. It's the biggest trading partner, but certainly not an investment partner. Mm. So it is not in our interest. Militarism is not in our interest. It is not in the interest of the United States people either, or China or anybody. But that fear of loss of economic stability propels the Australian ruling class to side with the United States even when it's not in its best interest. And that also, there's an element here which is almost part of the psyche of the country. If you think of the history of the place and the symbolism, again, of the place, it has been built on fear. From the time of white settlement, white colonization of this continent, there was always a look over the shoulder. It was fear was engendered in the people. Somebody is going to come and take our stuff from us. It's historically been China, of course, and we've always been in a subservient position to, first of all, British imperialism, US imperialism, that says that unless we have a strong, not so much partner, but a strong wing under which we can shelter, we are in existential danger. It's never been the case. But by ramping up militarism, by building all of that, it does one of two things for Australia. It secures its position as a smaller imperialist power in the our immediate region. We have threatened, cajoled, coerced, and ill-treated the people of the Pacific. That has been able to be done because we are the major power in that region. We then, by allying ourselves so unbelievably with the United States, we can then play our role as we have seen ourselves playing a role with the United States imperialism since the Second World War, to secure support, to secure economic support, not military support, because the pacts never acknowledge that is going to be reciprocal. But the militarism also engenders in our own people, if handled well or poorly, a sense that fear factor still maintains. If we don't spend the 2% of GDP on the military, we're going to be in a weakened position. Militarism also holds a people in thrall. There is little room for manoeuvre on the part of people if overarching power is increasingly militarised. Whether that is the role of the armed forces, even the police become militarised under these conditions. The crisis that we are existing under within capitalism means that force becomes the greater way of implementing ideas rather than convincing of people. And if we can just finish up these comments on the idea that our new defence minister, Miles, in his first statement, his first utterance on all of this issues, was that despite... He was asked a question as to what about the economic crisis that we're facing? What does this mean for the military and defence spending? And he said it will not affect it 1 cent. Our spending will continue to grow, continue to rise. We're committed to that 2% of GDP for the military. The rest of us, the people, will be forced to be living in straitened times, economic recession. People will remain difficult to find houses, difficult to find decent health care, be ravaged by COVID viruses and all the rest of it, but the military will survive because that militarism is intensely part of the psyche of the country and growing as the threat to capitalism grows. And the threat to capitalism, as I said before, doesn't come from China, but it comes from capitalism itself as it fails. Mm. I think I might have diverged a little bit there.
No, it's good.
No, that's I think that's a great way to wrap up, William. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, we'll have you back. And I encourage people to read William Briggs' articles on Green Left. Thank you so much, William. William Briggs
Thank
is a
you.
Teacher, a journalist, a political economist, and activist. And we were just discussing, what the new government means in terms of this war drive against China, militarism, and the war. We're going to go to a song, and we'll be back with more news headlines.